The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
I remember having the argument with Jack beforehand, kind of going, Jack, if this shit doesn't work, you would have put me back out in the field and don't whip the big donkey out of full power.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
OTB AM
with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.
You know, that wasn't an All-Ireland winning performance.
Probably should have won the game based on the second half performance.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
OTBAN's performance rankings with Gillette.
I'm scratching my head. Our performances have just lacked that intensity.
On another week, Kieran Donaghy might well have made the performance rankings after the quality of football that he's putting in over the last couple of weeks.
Maybe if you're Jack O'Connor, you're like, hey, Star, we did this once. Could we do it again? Can you come off the bench for me? All I need is 4 or 5 minutes at the end of the game to see it out. Who knows? Stranger things have happened in the world of Gaelic football. Here's the performance ranking. So if we could stick them up, we're going to start Man United, Rory McIlroy, Irish rugby, Irish tens. And that's not Sexton and Carberry, although we could shoehorn Carberry in if you want us on that one. And the new Premier League managers gives an opportunity to talk about some of the good stuff that happened the weekend. Right, so Manchester United in the red. Difficult to know where to start with this one because... Well, this is supposed to cure everything now for a lot of people, right? There's enough money in the club. The squad is brilliant. The manager was the only thing holding them back. But actually, what if it isn't? What if the problems are so deep-seated that nobody can come in there and rescue that? That it's just a runaway train. It's an unmanageable, ungovernable sea. What if that's the case?
The manager coming in has a massive job. Like, it's not straightforward. You know, since Ronaldo came in, for whatever reason, a lot of Man United's other players have not been good at all. And I don't know what that is. I don't think he's helped in terms of the performances of offensive players. Bruno Fernandes has completely lost form. And I don't know why this is, but since Ronaldo has come in, and I remember having this chat with Joe Malloy, and Joe Malloy was saying the Ronaldo signing is essentially going to be a disaster, like, because it's going to cause so many problems in terms of, you know, fitting other players in and so forth. And it may cost Solskjaer his job. And... kind of in a way it has. Since Ronaldo has come in, as much as he's played well, they've been really, really poor. And I'm not probably a good enough football judge to say exactly why that is, why Maguire just can't do anything anymore. But there's a serious malaise there. I think, you know, you have to deal with the Pogba situation as well. So it's not straightforward. And in fairness to, I don't think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer did an awful bad job over the time he was there. I think last season they did okay. And I've made the point that it's a seriously, seriously good Premier League. Liverpool and Man City are exceptionally good, and as much as Man United have money, it's not easy to challenge them. It's not easy at all to, like, Chelsea are doing it this season, but it's not easy. He just wasn't able to do it.
It's so tangled, right? We were talking about this before we came on with some Manchester United fans who are very annoyed about the fact that they're appointing an interim manager and then going to try and get the next manager. Why can't they just get the next manager now, right? I actually agree.
Wizzy though.
Well, that's the point, right? Mm. I agree, you've got to give yourself 4 or 5 months to find the right person, to have the conversations and go, how are you going to fit in? What of the current playing stock do you think you can work with? What of the current playing stock do you think you can't work with? How expensive is it going to be for us to extract those players? Like, how much money will we lose on, can you make Jadon Sancho work? Because we just spent a lot of money on him. Mm. And if you can't make him work and he's not going to be one of your players, then rather than you coming in, spending 2 years diminishing the value of that asset, we would much prefer if you would come in and say, yeah, I can make Jadon Sancho work. Like, it's not straightforward, you know? The next manager coming in can't just come in and go, oh, well, I don't want Maguire and I don't want De Gea and I don't want, and it's like, okay, so we need $500 million to make your plans work. Because that's not going to work for Manchester United. They need somebody who's going to come in and go, I can make this current crop better and I need these two players. That's all, just these two.
Mm. Yeah, in fairness, Sancho actually was one of their better players, I thought, from what I saw on Saturday. I think they'd gotten to the situation where that performance was so bad, and it followed on from performances that were a little better, including against Liverpool and Man City. This was the point of no return with Solskjaer, so they just had to get him out, and even a caretaker boss will do a better job because they've no chance of making the top four the way they're playing, and they're going to go out of Europe as well. So I think there will be a managerial bounce of some description, I imagine, on Tuesday. And there will be initial bounce because Solskjaer had lost, he clearly lost the dressing room the way they played Saturday.
So Solskjaer lost the dressing room, but it's people who were in the dressing room at the same time who are going to be still there.
It'll still make a difference. It will. I guarantee you they'll start playing better now. Like,
who's going to start playing better though?
Well,
I don't. So, like,
even the interim manager, Carrick can make changes. They do have a reasonable squad. Like,
Carrick is assistant to the interim manager. Mm. So,
I mean, there's
a genius suggestion from somebody in the Examiner today about putting Wenger in charge until the end of the season. That would be
Jesus. That'd be amazing.
If there's a dream wish list of potential people to take over. I mean, obviously, Roy Keane will be top, but that's not going to happen. As Micah Richards points out, he slagged off everybody in the dressing room, so they're unlikely to respond to him. So my dream list of people here is Rooney's on that list. Wenger is on that list. Ronaldo's definitely on that list. Mm. And then after that, I don't really care who the interim manager is. Because, I mean, who could it be? Like,
yeah, I don't know. They it's a difficult dressing room, I'd say. That dressing room is gone at the moment. It's lost. Like,
is it so. Mark Hughes? Is that what we're looking at?
Mark Hughes. Big Sam.
Like,
does it have to be someone with Man United connections?
It doesn't. It could be. But so it's somebody who's out of work who won't want the job long term, but who has enough credibility in the short term. I mean, is it Ferguson? Is that what happens?
Well, clearly not. Like,
why is it clearly not? He could shuffle in and. Who do you want to play this week, Cristiano?
Yeah.
Nah. Do you know, like,
you got to remember, before Ronaldo signed, Man United were not having a bad season. Like, it's been really strange. I don't know what it is. And it's not him individually, even though he didn't play well on Saturday. There's been a serious malaise since he came in.
I think it started
the season okay, like.
I think it predates that, though, because Maguire and Shaw have not been the same footballers that they were since the start of the season, since the end of last season. The end of the Euros, right?
Yeah.
So I think Harry Maguire might be injured. Ole Solskjaer kept saying that he's not a player who hides in the treatment room. It's like, well, maybe if he's not fit, that's one of the reasons why he's not playing particularly well. Mm. He's second-guessing himself. But he's always had that. You can see inbuilt in Harry Maguire is a period of bad form and self-doubt.
Oh, massive
he carries
self-doubt.
Himself.
Yeah, yeah.
He carries himself that way.
The send-off was all about that.
Like, and so that was always going to be there. And you reading the stuff now coming out about the various meetings that Solskjaer's had and the hanging by a thread and his own. It's like he has personally reflected and carried the weight of the boom-bust cycle that he's been going through. Mm. And so that's not like, you know, when Klopp is raging, he rages. He tears, is it Des Kelly? Is that whatever it is? He has those rows on TV that everybody's like, oh, what's going on here? But he's got enough force of personality to be able to carry that. And more importantly, underpinning it all is a football philosophy. So there is no football philosophy at Manchester United at the moment.
No.
Beyond,
there was a great moment when Maguire was sent off and he kind of gave Solskjaer they just embraced, kind of clapped on the sideline. Like, it's not a high five, it's kind of a middling ranking five. And it was just this moment where you're looking at their body language. This kind of sums up what's wrong as well. You kind of should be raging with Maguire here. Like, can you imagine Ferguson doing that? Like, it was an appallingly bad mistake at a crucial time in the game. When, bear in mind, like, at 2-1, Van de Beek came on, played really well. So some of their fringe players played really well Saturday that aren't maybe affected by the malaise as much.
Yeah, and look, that is the one bit of hope for Manchester United and for Carrick, that he sticks a different team out that plays with a little bit less fear and care. And so maybe Jadon Sancho plays in his correct position, maybe Van de Beek plays in his correct position.
Ronaldo's a serious problem though, Ger. Like, he is, because
maybe
people
don't start Ronaldo in these games. You have, like, a conversation and say, look, Cristiano, we're going to give you this number of minutes over the next 5 games. You can play them all in one game and I'll give you 3 games off, or we can play you for 30 minutes and these. It's like, that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, well, when I saw Man United at their rest under Solskjaer, it was generally counter-attacking football at speed, and they were not bad at that. They can't do that at the moment.
They were excellent at that. Like,
yeah, and they were good against even Man City and Liverpool at times. They were able to set up, and Solskjaer had them playing quite well defensively, and I think you shouldn't underestimate that with an ordinary enough midfield at times, they were actually hard to break down in big games at times. But now, once you brought in Ronaldo, he can't press, like, so you take him out of the game as a defensive player, and he doesn't really have the speed on the break anymore.
See, I think that if Klopp had signed Ronaldo, then he would be able to make him, like, this is your role.
He wouldn't have signed Ronaldo. That's the point, though. He would not have signed Ronaldo in a million years.
Grand, but say you stuck Klopp in charge, he could still use Ronaldo in a way that Solskjaer
maximises his effectiveness.
And I don't think that the football brain power was there on the sideline at Old Trafford over the last 3 years, and there's been no signs of things improving. And even the contract decisions, like, so they made the point that he got rid of Fellaini and Lukaku and Sanchez really quickly, but Mata and Matic and a bunch of other players who who never really played. What's Lingard? Why didn't they just sell Lingard?
Mm.
Like, if you're not going to play him, sell him. Because at the weekend, he's tweeting the picture of the West Ham, him in the West Ham, and everyone's like, oh, look what he's doing. It's disloyal. And you're like, well, what else is he supposed to do?
Mm.
He comes off the bench and scores a winner for you early in the season. You're like, oh, well, that's interesting. He's obviously doing well. So I don't know. I think Manchester United in the red. I don't think they're going to catapult to freedom now that they've got rid of Solskjaer. I don't know how great that
there'll be a bounce. Like, how long it'll be, I don't know. But in fairness, Ger, like, I have watched them the last month or so. Like, their performances have been so bad, it's hard to believe. Like, they played on Saturday like they'd never played together before. It was, and then you even had De Gea sort of falling over the ball for, I think, was it the third goal? There's just all this catalogue of comical moments that were obviously tragic comedy if you're a Man United fan. Even like Bruno Fernandes, I mean, Man United could easily have come back and delayed the inevitable and won 3-2 in that second half, because, like, Watford aren't great, and they really were close to doing that, and Solskjaer wouldn't have been sacked. We'd be talking about, oh, the great entertainment, but the likes of Bruno Fernandes had a really good chance, blazed over from close in, and some of their key players have just completely lost the plot. And I kind of feel sorry for Solskjaer on a human level, because I think he's a man who's carried himself with great decency, probably to his own fault, but he was never the man for that job. Let's
be honest.
He seems
like a nice fella.
Seems like a nice bloke.
He'd be a great interim manager for Manchester United in the future when they need this scenario. He would. Like, that's the thing. He was the perfect person to come in for the interim and see the team.
Good job now, actually. Yeah.
Like, you know,
bring Solskjaer back for the rest of the season.
But he is not the person that you want to decide, okay, this entire multi-billion euro enterprise rests on the shoulders of this guy's football vision.
They should have interim managers, by the way, at the club. Like, they should have hungry, good coaches who are able to come in and do a job here. Like, and that's a question mark now as well. It's not all about Solskjaer. And Stephen Kenny's progress as Ireland, such as it is, has been a lot of it down to, like, the coaches working under him. And where are these coaches? Are they there at Man United? I don't know.
The other thing about signing Varane's injury profile is such that he plays 20-odd league games a season, and he's going to play, maybe if he's lucky, 20 league games a season. So the whole, they invested all this money in these players, like they did, but they did buy someone who, so I'm just reading here, Raphael is still a few weeks away, he's working hard in his fitness. This was in a piece that they did last Friday on the website. So he was supposed to be out for a month, he's already been out for more than a month. It's like he's a little bit porcelain, and they built the change from last year to catapult them into title contention was, we're signing Sancho, playing in the wrong position, bit of a bust so far.
Yeah.
And Varane, whose injury profile is rubbish, and then Ronaldo, who's destabilised tactically, has not been a piece that they can use, even though he's one of the reasons why they've been able to still be in.
Has he destabilised the dressing room, though?
I don't think he's. I don't know. If he has, the dressing room's pretty weak, isn't it?
Yeah, because obviously he's reportedly not been happy himself for the last few. And he played like that on Saturday now. I haven't seen any improvement from any other player offensive for Man United since he's come in. They've basically regressed themselves.
Can you believe the games are still. It's. The one of the other standard things in the weekend was Klopp admitting, I hate the international break. I hate it. The best part about it from our perspective is that there's big games the weekend, and then on Tuesday, tomorrow, Manchester United play in the Champions League at Villarreal. Mm. This is sensational. Is that a 5:45 kickoff? Wow.
Yeah, that's a quick turn. Like, I'm quite certain to say there are far too many football games nowadays. Everyone plays too much, but this is like
this is great,
because it's quick. It just keeps us entertained very quickly. Like, no break, straight into it. What's the car crash going to be in Spain?
Manchester United have no idea what's coming next. Mm. That's the other thing. Like, the worst part about, and the clearest indication that they are not a very well run club on that side of the business is that there isn't, okay, so these are the guys that we've talked to and said at some point in the future, the Manchester United job, we'd like you to come and give us your opinion about how you would do this, right? Because that's, at that level, you're talking about there's only five or six candidates in the world who can do this job. You should have them. It's not tapping up. It's like,
sound it out anyway.
Would you live in Manchester for a start? Do you think you and your family could be happy living in Manchester? Because if you're not going to live in Manchester, you can't have the job. Right, none of this flying in and out nonsense. And then your portfolio of work suggests that you will be capable of dealing with the egos that we have. That's great. How much money would it cost, roughly? Okay, Grant, the job's not available, but you know and I know that at some point we'd like to talk to you about it. So you just have to think about it. That's
reportedly Pochettino is open to it in the summer. Which
I mean, certainly Pochettino's agent is letting PSG know that he's open to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was interesting as well. Because he's contracted until, I think, the following year.
Yeah. Who else can do it? Ten Hag can do it, can he? I don't know. Mm. We don't know. He might be absolutely amazing. He could be exactly what they need. Or he could be one of those managers who comes to the Premier League and finds that, I'm not really up to this. Because there's loads of those.
You've pointed out like a few times on the show that the earth is burning and sport is a great triviality. But in terms of great triviality, the Man United saga is the greatest of greatest trivialities.
Because, I love them for it.
Do you know, like the club itself is making so much money. Everyone is kind of, nobody really cares in terms of the people who actually are benefiting from Man United making loads of money. That's, we're just talking about them all the time. They're great soap opera. They're massively successful financially. And yeah, this is, we're just talking about it all the time, even though the laugh is on us, like. We are like the royal family looking at the TV in some respects, like giving out about the TV, but looking at the TV. Because the Man United, it's been such a, I don't know, it's been so pantomime and it's just never ending. But it is a great triviality.
It is. Give us your thoughts on this. You can hit us on the WhatsApp 0879 180 180 or you can send your comments through onto, on the YouTube channel. Right, next, Rory McIlroy. Oof, things did not go well for Rory McIlroy at the weekend. With four or five holes of his round left, he was still in the lead thereabouts, and then collapsed with a bunch of bogeys over the last few holes. And then Johnny's holding up a picture there.
Yeah, this is the back of the indoor off. He's torn.
Rage McIlroy tears up shirt as Morikawa wins big in Dubai. So Morikawa won the tournament and won the race to Dubai DP. First American to win the European Tour Order of Merit, which is what it used to be. And it was kind of like, oof, all the old failings of McIlroy, a bit flaky at the end.
Mm.
Not great.
What's going on with him?
Well, I don't know. I mean, if he'd won this, right? I saw one of the golf writers tweeting yesterday morning when he was going great guns, like, wow, this is going to be incredible. 5 months out from Augusta, there's going to be nothing but hype. McIlroy wins back to back at the end of the year. I was kind of making the point, he was a bit like the Irish rugby team, you know, awesome at the wrong times. Mm. Like, out of cycle, he's like the best player in the world by a mile, capable of killing anybody. And then just around about March, April, when you need to be informed for Augusta, it's like, poof, like us at the World Cup. But I don't know. And these things happen, right? Because they play every week. So there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of opportunities over the course of his career where we've seen him win from this scenario.
Yeah.
But also like 5 or 10 or 15 where he doesn't win because that's, it's impossible to be perfect the whole time. So maybe that's what's happening. I don't know. Obviously, he split with his coach and went back to his old original coach, Michael Bannon, and then won the last time he won. And that was all the speculation about the split from Pete Cowan. And then he confirmed the split from Pete Cowan, which seems to have happened before he won the last time. And then comes out and plays brilliantly, like tears the course up on the first day and is going perfect until the back nine, when normally you'd kind of expect him to be at it. But the weird thing that happened here is that he ripped his shirt, like very dramatic, kind of like, I'm dealing with this fine, it's all fine, isn't it? And then, I don't know, and then you have it photographed. So
have you ever had a sporting meltdown where you've just like,
oh yeah,
lost the plot?
Yeah, definitely. Underage hurling in a blitz, I remember. Gone
mad. Involve a hurler?
It involved, my dad was the coach, and it involved shouting at him.
Your dad?
I thought that we had been unjustly denied a goal. So, you know, took it out in the referee, who happened to be my dad and the coach.
<'Cause>
not
like,
good.
Yeah. Look at you now, though.
We're still talking.
Yeah.
What about you? You obviously have.
No, I wouldn't be too bad. It wouldn't be too bad. I remember kind of the old the snooker, the pool cue at home got a lot of bashings when I was younger. But no, I wouldn't be too bad, actually. Not as public as McIlroy, anyway. Maybe he's just realising that. Like, is he realising that this just isn't happening for me? My career is just not happening where it should be.
I mean, you have
a moment where it's like, ah, here.
But here's the thing. He was still in contention against some of the best golfers in the world. And Just needs to make sure that the next time the meltdown happens, he deals with it slightly better and doesn't get out of contention. Shifty Lad has been in touch to say, Bielsa for Manchester United. And also, Johnny needs to get sponsorship for his cup every time he's on. Gala, Costa, come on, lads. We are open to a coffee sponsor on OTBAM.
Bielsa would be amazing. What age is he, though? He's, and I'm not being ageist here, but is he... What an amazing man. And he would, yeah, he'd definitely do better than Solskjaer, I would have thought.
David Bosang says, this is the longest I've ever heard Johnny Ward speak without mentioning Gavin Bazunu.
Give us time.
Bazunu could play for Man United. Would City ever sell him?
Yeah, what's he worth? There's a good interview with Mark Travers in the Sunday Times yesterday. Like, it's mad that... Like, Travers could be playing, for all I know, he is playing really well at club level, and I think he is. But we've an embarrassment of riches in the goalkeeper and centre back situation, particularly goalkeeper at the moment. And what's going to happen with Kelleher? Like, and I do wonder with Kelleher now, should he be playing somewhere?
I think he's young enough. Like, I think so. You're a goalkeeper, your plan is to play to your mid 40s, right? You need to. Mm-hmm. So, if you look at Emi Martinez, was at Arsenal for 10 years not getting a game and then goes to Villa, and he's ready for it when he gets there, you know. Like, I
he should also be getting the best coaching in the world, and he's playing with Alisson, he's training with Alisson, like, yeah. So there are a lot of positives, but yeah, haven't mentioned the great man yet. No.
Okay, let's fly through these. So there in the red, Man United and Rory McIlroy. In the amber, we've put Irish rugby. This is because the women's team, although they won at the weekend, you'd have to say they're still in the red. The men are definitely in the green, so in between, we've mixed the two colours. And I know that our primary colours mixing doesn't actually give you red plus green equals amber, but in this weird scenario, we have decided that Irish rugby is in the amber because what's going on with the women's team when your best player and your captain is retiring at 27?
27, yeah.
Not great.
An amazing conclusion,
up.
Yeah.
Yeah, like something is up. Something is rotten in the state of Denmark, and you really hope that the arrival of the new coach injects some sense of urgency into the rest of the IRFU and that they back him with what needs to happen and that the players continue to step up and that they take their part and whatever lessons are coming from the fallout of this World Cup campaign and just move on. Because, you know, 5-6 years ago, the women's team were reaching World Cup semi-finals and winning Grand Slams and competing against the best teams in the world. And for whatever reason, the IRFU decided to make the decision to go down the route of the sevens. It hasn't worked out, so you'd have to hold the IRFU accountable for that. And that's where it looks like the original sin is. So that's the women's game. The men's game, obviously, is it time to get carried away? Luckily, New Zealand at the weekend... We're not very good against France, and so we can't get too carried away.
Yeah.
But we were pretty good.
It was interesting, because considering, like, the victories over Japan and Argentina, I mean, what would the spread have been for those games? Like, it would have been respectable, like 12, 14, something like that, maybe?
Ireland were New Zealand were minus 11, minus 10. That was
So we've defied expectation, and there was a real, I don't know, like, watching it yesterday, that was an incredibly... like all-round performance, was it not?
I'd say we beat the spread against New Zealand by 20 points, and we probably beat the spread by 25 points against, at least.
Against Argentina.
Probably more. I didn't see the spread pretty much.
It was just, I don't know, you're looking all over the pitch, and there's a massive confidence in the players, like really, really good body language all over the place, and I don't know, it was great to watch. I don't know, did people watch the France game? Because I think that's probably a good indicator of where we're at, because that was probably let's just hold our horses here a little bit.
It was on Amazon Prime. A lot of people probably don't have Amazon Prime, and it's clunky to flick between. So the sooner it's on the Sky platform, the better. But I just think that, I don't know, we have... It's going to be very interesting to see what happens. The next 2 years now is really set up very well for Irish rugby fans. The games, I think one of the games is in, it's on the, is it one in Nantes, one's in Bordeaux, and then two in Paris. They're like a World Cup in our time zone, where we're hopefully going to be good. I mean, touch wood.
When is Carberry they starting out off?
For the Six Nations, they should mix it up half and half, right? And just go, look.
Who's the starting half?
So we will decide at the World Cup who the starting one is. Sexton's the captain, so you can't drop him. But we now have other leaders emerging, and this is like, we're going to try and win this competition, and we're going to manage all your minutes. But will decide who the starter is in the World Cup quarterfinal when that pops up.
And a human level, it's really, really nice to see him getting a run, like, where he can actually show what he's capable of. And you could see that yesterday. It was cool to see. Like, the game is dead. They move him to full back. And his range of his skills, like, I'm obviously a half-arse rugby fan, but he's great to watch. I love watching him play.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Sensational. Mm. All of those things that Stephen Kenny talks about at the Irish.
He would love Joey Carroll.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard with Matt Williams on last week, and he was talking about the Irish national character being creative and positive.
What?
He was talking about your music and your poetry, and it was like, okay, so if you're an outsider
Stony
and you come
gray
here,
soil,
and yeah. Well, yeah. I mean,
maybe we think of ourselves differently. Yeah,
we do. Mm. He came and I was like, oh yeah, you're right. We should expect things. Andy Farrell said exactly the same thing. It's like there's this stereotype of us in the Northern Hemisphere of being like hardworking and committed, and it's like, well, we have skills. We're skillful. We can be creative. I'm like. And you start telling people they can be creative, Mullinoy goes Chucky Shee, and lo and behold, the football team is playing well. One of the things in the papers today, I tweeted this earlier on, Jill Downey from Core Sponsorship was saying, she's the managing director of Core Sponsorship, so they're like one of the biggest agencies in the country who manage lots of different campaigns for the biggest brands. And so when she's talking about sponsorship, she's like one of the three or four people in the country who know the most about sponsorship. There's a piece about the TV viewership for the football team. These numbers now become very interesting for a commercial partner who might be considering an opportunity to get on board with the FAI. Very quickly, you should see some strong movement. They've done enough now to be considered again by big brands. The football is getting better all the time and they're actually becoming a joy to watch, and that is significant for sponsors.
Yeah,
all the stuff about Liam Brady is like, oh, if you're running a business, you pay for all the information. It's like, no, you get the deal done now. Mm. You get the deal done now and you get it in, you're like, okay, this is, and that's what the brands want as well. So
I've said that a few times in the show here. I think it's a massive opportunity at the moment. And it's not only the fact that people are watching, it's the identity of the Ireland team, who they are. They represent different parts of Ireland, all over the country, really. We have from Derry to Cork, Dublin, Galway. We've players with mixed backgrounds. They're a very, very likeable team as well, you know. And there's, I think the... You can't...
Very connected to the fans.
Very connected to the fans. And, like, I was just thinking now, I don't know, like, obviously at the game yesterday, there were a few empty seats. Like, it's fairly expensive to watch a rugby game. Like, it's 85 quid or something was the ticket.
That was cheap compared to the All Blacks game.
Yes, and this is like... Now, I don't know if they packaged how they packaged the Autumn Series or whatever, but, like, Ireland games, football games are going to be... I think they'll be pretty much sold out from now on.
I hope so.
In general.
So Irish 10s are in green. This is not Johnny Sexton and Joey Carberry and Harry Byrne and Ross Byrne and whoever else you want to put in that. This is football 10s.
Yeah, like just something I noted at the weekend. Jamie McGrath's goal for St Mirren was so good. Like, it was an unbelievable bit of skill and came from kind of nothing. And Jamie's obviously just come back into the fold. I think Conor Ronan would have started with him on Saturday for St Mirren. One all draw against Livingston. Subsequent equaliser by Livingston. Sean McGuire scored early on for Preston. He's kind of a forgotten man, but he got a goal after 2 minutes. Jason Knight got a header from a corner, which is another part of his repertoire. Now he, like, I have to say, I haven't seen enough of Jason Knight to really have a strong view on him. But anyone who saw him in that like cameo against Luxembourg, you're like, well, if you can do that at 19 years of age and show the game intelligence that he showed for the two goals, not to mind getting the free kick, which itself was game intelligence because he's drawn the foul. We score a lot of goals from set pieces. So he's shown really, really good intelligence in terms of what he's doing at 19. Caught a goal for Wayne Rooney. And finally, I just want to mention Danny Mandroyu because I don't think people are noticing how well he's playing at the moment because Shamrock Rovers are kind of cantering to league title. And Danny Mandroyu came to Shamrock Rovers with a lot of people doubting him because it had ended sourly at Bowes. But I think it's definitely not an exaggeration, and Stephen Bradley said this as well. He should be on the cusp of the Ireland squad at the moment. He's playing exceptionally well. I thought some of his play Friday night against Drogheda, if you're kind of not necessarily like in tune with the League of Ireland, just watch his pass for Graham Burke's first goal. And Graham Burke's first touch on his left foot. Like, it is literally world class. It's so good. And then you're thinking, Jack Byrne was paraded before the game. They've Dylan Watts, who to me is the best player to watch in the league. The number 10s type player that Shamrock Rovers have at the moment, they're so good to watch. I'm not exaggerating here. They're really, really good to watch. I don't think I've seen this quality League of Ireland level very often. But for the Irish 10s and Stephen Kenny kind of looking for those players that can come in and make a difference, Knight, Jamie McGrath, and maybe Danny Mandra down the line. It was a very good weekend.
Yeah, for sure. And then new Premier League managers also in green. We've got Stevie G, we've got Ranieri, we've got Dean Smith, we've got Conte, all winning at the weekend. Very self-conscious, Stephen Gerrard. Very, very self-conscious. He was asked afterwards about, I don't know what the exact phrase of the question was, but the subtext is, so the Villa fans are quite suspicious of the fact that you're really here just, and you're going to get asked this question every time something happens. And he was like, well, you just have to look at me and how I celebrated the goal. It's like,
He did.
And it looked like he was going to run down, like he was going to celebrate with the whole... It looked like he was back to celebrating a big goal for Liverpool. And my initial reaction was like, yeah, go for it. Go on, have the crack. And then, but afterwards you're like, is it just for show?
Gerrard's a weird one for me because he never struck me as a player. You know the way you look at players and you're like, oh, I wouldn't fancy him as a manager. And Gerrard, for me, was never overly convincing when he spoke about the game that he'd become a really good manager. But there's nothing at the moment to suggest that he may not be a very good manager. No. This will be interesting. This link with the Liverpool job to me is kind of insane. Like,
it is totally insane.
He's no right to be involved in that debate in any shape or form. And it's almost irrelevant, like, that he played for Liverpool.
It's the type of nonsense that Man United would pull.
Exactly.
Not Liverpool, who have actually studiously tried to avoid that type of thing. So look, I don't know, but it was pretty exciting, and as a Villa fan you've got to get very excited about the fact that those games that were unfortunately going against them in recent weeks, they would have lost that one for whatever reason when Dean Smith was the manager, and then Dean Smith comes and does brilliantly for Norwich, who've now got back-to-back wins, one with one manager and one with him.
But look at Spurs though. Like, I mean, you got to remember Spurs' performance against Man United, just how bad that now looks. Like, so how can a club go from that to that in the space of a manager? It's amazing. Like, they've become a good team again.
Are they a good team? I'm not sure. We'll see.
The top four battle is going to be interesting because...
You think they're in it?
Arsenal were pathetic against Liverpool. Like, I said on Saturday, I think Arsenal gave them a good game here, definitely. And, like, they were playing like a team that were relegation fodder. They were absolutely battered. Like, but Man United, like, who's going to finish fourth? It could be West Ham, but they lost as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's really... But Spurs are not far off. Like, they're only 3 points on fourth now or something like that.
Claudio Ranieri also, by the way, I don't know what's going to happen at that club for the rest of the year, but his start has been spectacular. He's definitely not going to be the manager there next November. We know that for a fact.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a wild ride in the meantime. It was a brilliant, crazy... Oh, Eddie Howe is the other new manager who we haven't talked about.
Yes, indeed. It was a dramatic game.
Wasn't actually at the game because of COVID. I mean, you just wonder, is St. James's Park built on an old native burial ground or something? Is it cursed deep down? Is it cursed somewhere? Right, that is this week's performance rankings.
OTB AM's performance rankings with Gillette.
OTB AM
with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.